Welcome, everyone, to episode 374 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we have a lot of trade rumors to sort through. The NBA is getting ready to explode, so we're going to walk you through all of the latest, most noteworthy ones and discuss some possibly seismic trades coming in the next week. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are also recording today via the Locker Room app. You can download it on iOS and listen in live. You can join the conversation, ask us questions in real time. So please come hang out. With all of that said, joining me today is a guy who I'm assuming is just going to say, I told you so for the next 30 minutes. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
It's going well, Brian. You know, it's we're in November, so it's getting colder. So I'm just making a ton of stew now, like, you know, the comfort food, the late fall comfort food. So I'm well. I have just filled up on hot stew, so I'm ready to go.
Well, that sounds great. Let's just jump right into it, Mort. I think we got to hit the biggest one first, which is the news that really, I mean, I want to say it caused NBA Twitter almost to crash immediately when it came out.
I know. That Minnesota for 17th pick
is amazing. The blockbuster that is a mid-first round pick. No, on Wednesday morning, I believe, Adrian Wojnarowski and Tim McMahon of ESPN reported James Harden and Russell Westbrook had expressed concern about the direction of the Rockets in the wake of them parting ways with head coach Mike D'Antoni and general manager Daryl Morey. Right. Total surprise. That was not a huge surprise. But later that day, Shams Charania of The Athletic at 7:11 p.m. tweets out, Russell Westbrook wants out of Houston. And man, NBA Twitter went wild for the next few hours. So, Mort, just right away, what are your thoughts about Russ wanting out of Houston?
I get it. Yeah. You know, I might not appreciate Russell Westbrook's game as much as you, but that is not to say that I want him to be in a place that's highly dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wants to go somewhere else where they have, you know, their ducks in a row. I get that. That makes complete sense. When your owner is Tillman Fertitta and, you know, you have your head coach running for the hills and your GM running for the hills, and maybe very soon James Harden won't be around, even if he is, quote unquote, locked in.
Right.
I totally get why Russ wants to go. The problem here is his enormous contract. Oh. He's got $132 million remaining on it over the next 3 years. When you hear that number, 132, you usually kind of think about, okay, that's like 4-5 years on the books.
Right.
This is 3 years, so it's just an enormous amount of money, which is going to be very, very difficult to move, I think, unless there's a team out there that's just desperate for star quality. But we'll get into that. But no, I hear him. He wants to go. I get it. I fully support the idea of it. Of course I do. I would be surprised if there are many established players in the NBA who's like, hey, I want to stay or go to Houston. That sounds like a great place. I don't think so.
Right. My general manager just left because my team owner was too cheap to spend in the luxury tax for the last few years. I could see the writing on the wall, but I'm ready to waste the rest of my prime going down with this sinking ship. Yeah. I do not blame Russ for wanting out. But as you say, the contract is certainly a problem. I mean, honestly, the thing that concerned me most about the Shams report, you had to click through to The Athletic to actually read the story after he tweeted this, but it was something along the lines of he was frustrated with the culture, which I can understand if they're, you know, catering to Harden in particular and like not willing to hold him accountable. But the other part was that he wants to go back to being like the ball dominant floor general that he was in OKC. And that's the part, if I'm, you know, a suitor considering trading for him, that's what makes me nervous more than the contract, honestly.
Oh, so you're saying that the article I wrote just hours later, when the Charlotte Hornets rumor hit that they shouldn't do it, is actually pretty astute?
Yeah. So, I mean, let's go into potential candidates to trade for him, because I think you can really separate them.
Oh, I can save you a lot of time on that one.
Well, I was going to say, I think you could separate them into two tiers. It's the... Okay. We've been talking about this for a while. There are a couple teams with cap space, and they can absorb his contract without having to send the requisite, you know, a similar amount back. So,
right.
You know, Charlotte, Detroit, New York, Atlanta, I don't see why they would be interested in him. They have Trae Young. He would be a terrible fit. Like, so I'm excluding them, but I think Charlotte, Detroit, New York is in one tier, and then, you know, the number of contenders that might be interested, allegedly the Clippers, maybe the Lakers, maybe the Bucks, who knows, you know, any of those teams that are just like, we know his flaws, we know his contract is terrible, but we're just betting on talent to win out. For the contenders, can you really think of a single trade that makes sense for any, like a Clippers Westbrook trade that makes sense?
No.
Right.
No. Sure, contractually I could, but that's not the point. The point is, why would Kawhi Leonard end up playing with Russell Westbrook? Why would he say yes to that?
Mm-hmm.
He's played against Russ plenty in the Western Conference. He knows what type of player he is. He's erratic. He takes, you know, bad decisions. I'm not going to sit here and just knock on Westbrook. He is undoubtedly a terrific player overall. He's highly, highly talented. But so often he just gets into his own head a little bit too much. I just don't think he's the type of player that Kawhi looks at and goes, oh, that's the guy who gives me another ring.
Right.
I just don't think that's in the cards. He doesn't space the court. His defense is, it varies wildly. Like one night he'll really engage himself and he'll look like the old UCLA Westbrook.
Mm-hmm.
And other nights he'll look like Trae Young. It's uncanny. And I think Kawhi, who really takes pride in his defense and takes pride in his teamwork, I don't think he would appreciate that. I think he knows that already. So I look at the Clippers and I go, that's a non-starter.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really tough to make a case that he would improve any of the contenders given how much they would have to send out in salary, right? I mean, it's...
Right, right.
Like the Bucks... Sure, if you're if it was just Russ for Eric Bledsoe, I could see it, but the salaries don't match. You would have to send out,
right?
You know, probably Brook Lopez and Pete, like Ersan Ilyasova, which is fine, but like Bledsoe plus Lopez for Russ, I don't think makes the Bucks better. And the Lakers would have to, you know, Dan Favale of Bleacher Report had tried to write a piece of like potential Lakers trade packages, and he was like walking through some of them with me as he was writing it. It was like, they just don't have the salaries to send out. It's right. I mean, you have to include Danny Green. I guess you could do like a sign in trade with any, you know, KCP, Avery Bradley if he opts out, JaVale McGee if he opts out, but otherwise, like, they just don't have that much to give up. Like Kyle Kuzma, the number 28 pick, is just not that attractive of a package. So, I mean, I think they're out.
Well. Not. I agree with you, but we don't know what Houston is looking for, because right. Tillman Fertitta might actually be completely satisfied taking nothing back just so he can save that money. We have no idea.
Yeah, it's true. And the Clippers are the same way. I guess you could cobble together some sort of Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell in the sign and trade. You know, you can put the salaries together, but like for the Clippers in particular, their depth was one of their big selling points all year. Right. So to give all of that up just for Russ, who, you know, I know they're looking for an upgraded point guard. They want more of a ball dominant point guard, but you know, given Russ's shooting woes, I don't know that he's necessarily the best fit next to Kawhi and Paul George, both of whom need the ball in their hands a decent amount too. Like both of them are pretty damn good on the ball.
Right. I totally hear you. We have a question from Sharan Panala. My apologies on the pronunciation.
Yes.
He basically says, Detroit? Why? And you know, basically, there is no why here because it wouldn't make sense. I will say as much. If you get Derrick Rose, Russell Westbrook, and Blake Griffin on the same team, that would be killer in 2011.
Yeah, right.
That, I mean, just 9 years ago, that would have been fantastic. Now, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I mean, our buddy Duncan is in the room right now, so I'm going to plug his piece. I know he wrote one, I believe, for Hoops Habit on a Russ-Blake Griffin trade, and I think he was trolling at the time. I think he was trying to reverse jinx it, and now the fact that it might come true is that much more hilarious. But I think that's a fair thing to ask for really any of these rebuilding teams. Like, for Detroit in particular, who are very much in the beginning stages of a rebuild, What does Russell Westbrook get you? Like, what is the point of bringing in a 32-year-old Russell Westbrook who is going to clog your books for the next 3 years? And that's not, you know, I'm one of the more ardent Westbrook defenders. Like, I do think he gets unfairly maligned because of his contract and his shot selection. Like, he is still an impactful player. 27 points, right. 8 rebounds, 7 assists last year, you know, averaging a triple-double in 3 straight years before that. Like, he is an all-around dynamic basketball player. That this isn't to say that, you know, he won't help those teams get better. He will, and they play in the East. Like, put Russell Westbrook on those teams, and who knows? They could compete for the 8th or 9th seed because the East is that bad. The problem is, I think because of his contract and because of his style of play, it is difficult to build around him. He cannot be the number one option on a title team. I mean, that point in his career, if it was ever true, he's past it now. And because his contract is so enormous and prohibitively expensive, especially relative to how much the salary cap is expected to go up over the next couple of years, you know, if you're starting from scratch and you're bringing him in, you're not going to be able to bring the necessary talent around that you would need to really get back into that top four mix. Like, sure, you can be the 8th seed, and if that's your goal, great, go for it. But, like, I don't, that's your ceiling, I think.
Oh, for sure. For sure it is. I mean, look, Westbrook wants to be the number one guy on a championship-level team with the contract that he's obviously getting paid. You know, that is very ambitious on part of Westbrook, which is fine. You know, he's an NBA All-Star. He's a former MVP. I get him having that mindset. Unfortunately, it's just not realistic in today's NBA whatsoever. He's just not that guy. I think he's a complimentary piece. Or a complimentary piece makes him sound like a role player, who's obviously more than that. But there's just no way in hell he can come in and dominate the ball like he did at OKC and expect that this would be a championship caliber team. So, you know, for him, it becomes a question of expectations, right? Like, where is he willing to give something up? If he wants to be the number one guy on a team, sure, he can go to the Knicks. Maybe, despite my protest, the Charlotte Hornets would be interested, and he could get carte blanche. Fine. But you're not going to necessarily make the playoffs. You're definitely not going to be a contender. So what is most important to him? I had a tweet here yesterday that I want to read you because I think it sums up the situation pretty well. So, going through every team situation and financial commitments, identifying a Russell Westbrook trade that makes sense for him, Houston, and the receiving team appears to be a non-starter. Someone will walk away disappointed, and I'm guessing that someone will be Westbrook.
So
that's how I look at it.
I want to go into the Knicks in particular, not just because, like, LOL Knicks, but because Mark Stein of the New York Times reported on about 2 hours ago now that the Knicks are on the short list of viable trade destinations for Westbrook. If they prove willing to absorb his giant contract and make him their centerpiece, there is a trade to be made, and they have waited. So I think what we said for Charlotte and Detroit holds true for the Knicks as well, but you know, the Knicks are in this position where they've just been so bad for so long, and they're in this major media market that, you know, they probably feel more pressure to add an impact piece like Russ, knowing that if we do this, we are not winning a title with him, but we just need, you know, someone to draw attention. Yeah, like yeah. We aren't patient enough to go through a normal multi-year rebuild and like bank on player development from Mitchell Robinson and RJ Barrett and whoever we draft with the number 8 pick this year, if we do draft with the number 8 pick. Like, we're just not willing to gamble on that, drawing in fans.
Right. So here's the thing. I get that, but this is where the Knicks fail constantly. Because if they do that, their fan base is going to explode. The Knicks fans, you know, the Knicks fan base is actually a pretty bright one if you remove all the trolls on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
They are smart basketball fans. They understand the intricacies of the salary cap, of player worth, of where the league is headed. And, you know, when you look at the smart fans out there, they're all clamoring for the Knicks to embrace new age basketball. They're clamoring to embrace, you know, being a part of the NBA in 2020 instead of just going, you know, necessarily star hunting, you know, short term solutions and all that. I think this could backfire so big. Remember many years ago when they had Stephon Marbury and they decided, you know what, let's add Steve Francis to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
The fan base, you know, they thought, the Knicks thought the fan base would love it because it's Steve Francis and name. The fan base hated it immediately. Like, they were almost rioting in the streets. It was such an unpopular move. And this would be similar. Even if Russell Westbrook is a very, very good basketball player, he's not the type of player who wins in 2020. The Knicks fans knows it. They know it'd be a PR move. And I think it would do more harm than good, honestly. Which is why, obviously, it's going to happen.
Right. Well, I mean, fundamentally, they probably have the easiest way to build a package for Houston. And this comes back to the question of what does Houston want, right? I mean, if it's just plain salary relief, okay, cool. The Knicks have that in spades. You know, Bobby Portis, Taj Gibson, Elfrid Payton, Wayne Ellington, Reggie Bullock. All of these guys are on deals that are either a team option or not, like, very lightly guaranteed for 2020, 2021. So, you know, if you're just looking to shave money, and even if you, you know, I mean, I can't imagine even if they take some of these guys back that they just outright waive them, because what message does that send to James Harden?
Right.
So, you know, they probably keep these guys in the fold, but then all of them come off the books after next season, and you have, again, a somewhat blank slate to build around him, even although you also have Eric Gordon weighing you down. So, you know, if it's literally just salary relief thereafter, the Knicks do have an opportunity to do it. And, like, you know, I don't think they would put up much of a fight if Houston says, we want Dennis Smith Jr. back or Frankie Smokes back. You know, like, they have some young prospects. Even Kevin Knox, I mean, I know they say they aren't giving up on him, but, you know, I can't imagine they're enamored with his first 2 years in the league.
Right.
I think the line, I would hope that they draw the line, RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson. Like, neither of those guys belong within 10 miles of a Russell Westbrook trade.
Agreed. And I would even include the number 8 in that discussion,
yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Because that's, look, Knicks fans went ballistic when they dropped down to 8. And I actually thought that was a great place for them to end up. There's no pressure like the Minnesota Timberwolves will have right now at picking at the very, very top. You know, you can probably get a lot of the same guys who can get at 5, you can get at 8. You know, we had Jonathan Wasserman on the pod, and he basically said, you know, from 15 to 40.
Right.
It's virtually the same thing. So if you're picking 8, you're picking within the first 15 anyway, you can come away with someone good. Like, Kyra Lewis, if he's there, boom, that's your point guard. Moving forward, that could be your 12th-year point guard.
Mm-hmm.
I love where the Knicks are at in the draft here, and I love Mitchell Robinson. I am less enthused about the first year of RJ Barrett, admittedly, but I'm not there when I'm basically saying, oh, he's not going to turn into something.
Sure.
I'm closer to that on Kevin Knox at the moment. But no, I agree with you. I think they should stand fast and say there are certain pieces that we're just not moving in a Westbrook trade.
Mm. Yeah, question, I mean, because you're doing...
Yeah, oh, I'm just sorry, saying, the question is, like, will they listen to that logic internally?
Yeah, I was just going to say, because, like, you're doing the Rockets a favor by taking that big of a contract. I know Russell Westbrook is still good, still an all-star caliber player, but you know, you can't necessarily just factor in production. Like that's the job of an NBA general manager, is to balance, you know, financial value versus production. And you know, sometimes really good players get overpaid. It happens a lot, actually. I mean, you know, Sixers fans would not hate Tobias Harris and Al Horford if they were paid half as much as they are. Unfortunately, right. They aren't, and it makes it really tough to build around them. The same goes for Russell Westbrook. I mean, the thing working in the Knicks' favor right now is that, you know, RJ Barrett, Kevin Knox, Mitchell Robinson, at least for right now, are still on their rookie deals, so you can afford to have a Russell Westbrook in the fold and still have some room with which to build. And again, like, they're probably going to have roughly $40 million in cap space, so they don't have to send back anywhere near $40 million to, you know, if they just want to send back, like, Bobby Portis and Elfrid Payton, whatever it takes, you know, they don't have to send back all of that money, so it could be financial savings for Houston. So, I mean, like, it's going to – I mean – If this trade does happen, and the Knicks do trade for Russell Westbrook, Twitter will burn down. That is my first prediction. But, you know, of all of the rebuilding teams out there with cap space, I can at least understand the Knicks' rationale more than most. I do wonder this, though. You know, given the state of the pandemic right now, and I know NBA is, like, releasing details about how it's going to welcome fans back in the stadium, and I'll believe it when I see it. But, you know, I think it's probably safer to assume, at least at the start of the season, we're going to have limited capacity or just maybe no fans at all. And I wonder if that affects Westbrook's trade value. Because I think part of the appeal, especially for a rebuilding team, especially for a team like the Knicks, is you bring in a Russell Westbrook, you know, in a year ago, pre-COVID. And part of the appeal is like, oh, okay, this is the guy we put in the marquee. This is the guy who's going to sell 20,000 seats a night.
Yeah.
If you're not selling tickets, you're not selling as many tickets, does that impact your willingness to trade and take a gamble on a guy like this?
Yes. Yes. I absolutely think so. And I think this is a great point. It was one of the first things I also thought about yesterday because, look, it's the appeal of having an athletic point guard who can get you triple doubles and do all these crazy things on the floor. You want to go see that, and then team success on some level be damned because he's entertaining. If that entertainment factor is only present on TV when you can watch him for any team he trots out for, what's the appeal? I agree with you. I definitely think not having fans in the stadium is going to lower his trade value. And by the way, while I just have the word here, Sean Coleman, I have seen your question. We are going to talk about Chris Paul to potentially Phoenix here in a couple of minutes. So I'm saving your question for when we bring up that topic.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, we will not devote all of our time to Russ going to the Knicks. But, you know, I think it goes to show that, you know, again, you have to, like, be careful with who you believe at this time of year. The Scoopies of the world are going to throw crap against the wall and hope something sticks. Like, Ari Abraham is going to dig out of his COVID denial cave any minute now, I'm sure. Mark Stein, Adrian Wojnarowski, Shyam Charania, when these people are reporting Chris on Haynes. Something, yeah, Chris Haynes, like, when any of the big name newsbreakers who you've, like, you grow to trust over the years, when those people are reporting on something, that isn't to say it's definitely going to happen, right? I mean, NBA trade talks break down all the time. You can't agree on compensation, whatever. I do believe that these teams have at least inquired. Like, I'm pretty sure now, given how many reporters have leaked this, and, you know, I'm pretty sure Russell Westbrook has told the new general manager in Houston, I want out, and I'm sure the Knicks, Leon Rose, their new team president, has called Houston to at least have exploratory conversations. What would it cost? Not that we are, you know, at the 1 yard line on these talks, but just, like, let's at least get some sense of what you're looking for, how we can help. Are we even in the same ballpark in terms of compensation? Because, you know, if Houston's saying, like, you guys send back RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson, the Knicks should be like, all right, good luck. Have fun with that for the next 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So one final question before we close up shop on Westbrook, and this is in regards to his trade value as well. Do you think, because I can't imagine this not being the case, given what the Rockets gave up for him over a year ago, do you think that factors into what Houston could potentially demand in a return? Not lose face.
Right. I mean, I think it it probably will or it should, but I think given how both players' trade value changed over the past year, I don't think Houston can realistically expect to get back two first round picks and two pick swaps. Like, that's just not going to happen. Because we saw, in Houston, we saw some of the challenges of building around Russ, right? I mean, they had to trade Clint Capella to maximize Russ. And when they did, he played exceedingly well over those couple of months. So this isn't to say Russell Westbrook is a bad player, but it's like, this is a guy that you have to change the composition of your team to maximize. And is he worth doing so? And then factor in the contract, factor in the age. I just don't think teams are going to be willing to give up that much to get him other than salary relief, which again is, right. That puts the Knicks in the driver's seat because they have plenty of salary relief to offer. And, fine, Frankie Smokes, DSJ, they're out on both of those guys anyway, and both of them are up for an extension this offseason or free agents next offseason. So, I don't think they're married to either of those guys, but I don't think they're going to be willing to give up something of actual value. I'm with you. The number 8 pick should not be on the table.
Yeah. It's funny, you brought up Houston in terms of when they traded Capella. Russ played so much better afterwards, and in a large part of that was because he was essentially being played as a power forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is also interesting moving forward for any team that takes him on. You kind of realize he's not your traditional point guard in that sense. If Russell Westbrook was to be given a position, it would be, a power point guard forward. He's basically, a weird mix. You can't really slot him in. You would still have to give him a huge usage rate. It's everything just lines up so poorly in every way you look at it. He's definitely not gonna get his wishes fulfilled in its entirety. If he's going to be shipped to a contender, he's not going to be the number one guy.
Right.
If he's going to be the number one guy, he's not going to be shipped to a contender.
So, right. Right.
Westbrook is probably going to have to accept some defeats over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. So let's go into the other big name that was floated in trade discussions. This is from Brian Windhorst and Tim Bontemps of ESPN. They reported Tuesday that the Phoenix Suns have had discussions about acquiring Chris Paul from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Talks have been ongoing and have continued to gather traction, but there is no deal imminent. And, in part because we still don't know when trades are even allowed. So before we get into the specifics, what do you think just conceptually about Phoenix going after CP3?
I get it on the surface. They want to make the push for the playoffs, and they're so close. So, again, I get it. I am still a little bit cautious about trading for a guy who's going to be 36 next year. Mm-hmm. That is not something that would behoove me if I'm a young franchise. Now, this would be a sort of a teacher's moment, I think, where you bring him in for a couple of years. Hopefully he has this residual effect on the team moving forward. And then you kind of go, he helped elevate us to a certain point. And then now we're pivoting into someone who's more age appropriate with Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. That makes sense. That said, it's still a lot of money for someone that age who could potentially drop off by next season. You don't know. I'm not saying he will. I don't think he will, but you can't close the door on that risk. It is there. When players come of that age, you just don't know. But no, I get it conceptually.
Yeah. And I think the thing working in Phoenix's favor here is that the framework of a deal is pretty easy to assemble, at least contractually. It's going to involve Ricky Rubio. You have no reason to pay him $17 million to come off the bench. You'll send him either back to OKC, or if OKC doesn't want him, find a third team. And then Kelly Oubre, who missed the entire bubble, you know, a really good player, and one that I think the Thunder probably should have some interest in, because he's not, he's going to turn 25 in December. He's on an expiring contract, so they, you know, basically a one-year audition for him. And if things don't work out, okay, let him walk next offseason. But, you know, then you have to add in a little bit extra salary, which should not be exceedingly difficult. But, you know, I think that's the framework that you can work from here. And you're still keeping Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges. You're probably keeping Cameron Johnson. And the thing I saw is that, you know, Phoenix, if they... The order of operations is going to be really important here, because they can either operate this offseason as an over-the-cap team, keep Saric and Baines on their books, or keep their cap holds on their books, and then they would have the mid-level exception to play with. Or if they renounce all of these guys, they could have like upwards of $20 million. So they could go out, get a power forward in free agency, whether it's Gallo, Davis Bertans, Jeremy Grant, someone else, and then afterward pull off this trade for CP3.
Yeah. So I get that. I love Kelly Oubre, though.
I know. I do, too.
I think there's something there, and I think he's the perfect new age power forward, to be perfectly honest with you. He's got ball skills. He can shoot. He's not too tall, so he can get into the paint. And I think you need that type of player, that archetype of player next to Ayton. I don't think a Jeremy Grant would necessarily fit. He's not as fluid. He's not as strong on the dribble. And I'm saying that as a big Jeremy Grant fan, I just don't think he would fit into that concept. You know, he fit next to Jokic pretty well because Jokic is a ball handler and a point center. Mm-hmm. DeAndre Ayton is not that.
Right.
in case you're confused. I don't think that archetype of player would fit with Grant. And I think Oubre, though, that's like, that's chef's kiss fit. So I would hate to give up Oubre, and you're going to hate me for this, and Suns fans are going to hate me for this. I would probably be more open to moving Bridges than I would Oubre.
Wow.
I know.
Sorry. Wow. Interesting. Yeah.
I'll admit that, and I love Mikal Bridges, by the way. But I just like Oubre that bit more. And I might be irrationally optimistic about Oubre. I'll admit as much. Now I think it's time for Sean's trade idea, by the way, because I don't even know if he's still on. But so Sean Coleman proposed a three-team trade here. Chris Paul to Phoenix, Oubre and Montrezl Harrell in a sign-and-trade to OKC, and Ricky Rubio to the Clippers, and then throw in filler assets where needed.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's interesting, I think. Like, turning it into a three-teamer. Maybe not this one in particular, but the idea of turning it into a three-teamer, I think, could be interesting.
I actually think that framework is interesting for OKC, provided they could trade Steven Adams elsewhere.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Because then Harrell would kind of take over. Yeah. I like that.
Or, I mean, you know, maybe Harrell just keeps the same role that he had with the Clippers, where he's coming off the bench and he can serve as the small ball center. Like, I don't think Harrell and Steven Adams fit together very well. I think you're playing those guys, you know, you're not playing them 30 minutes a game. I don't think Montrezl Harrell should be starting next to Steven Adams. But if you could bring in a stretch five and put him next to Montrezl, you know, Montrezl is young enough. He's springy. Pair him with SGA. I think, you know, they played together with the Clippers for a bit, so it's intriguing, at least.
Yeah, it's not a bad deal.
I don't think any one of those teams sees that framework again. You know, there would need to be filler picks going somewhere, probably, but
right.
I don't think any of those three teams just hang up the phone right away.
No, I agree with that. I think the question for me is Harrell. You know, we saw how the center position has changed financially in terms of contractual value.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, just half a year ago, or actually more a little bit less than that even, we were sitting there going, oh, it might be 15, 16 million a year for Montrezl Harrell.
Yeah.
And maybe he's looking at a contract that's closer to the non-tax MLE, honestly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's what... I don't remember 100%, but, you know, John Hollinger of The Athletic has been going through, like, his free agent values for every player, and I want to say Montrez was MLE or possibly even less.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, I don't remember 100%, but I don't think he was of the mind that Montrez Harrell is getting $20 million a year from any team, nor should he.
No, I would be very surprised. And look, if Montrezl Harrell gets $20 million a year, I demand that for we on this podcast gets at least $500,000 a year.
Yeah, if that's how badly the market is overvaluing everything. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yes, then I want to get overpaid as well, significantly so.
Right.
No, but so just to roll it back with the whole CP3 thing.
Yeah.
Yes, if they get this year's version, like if he's able to basically mimic that for next year, next to Devin Booker, good Lord. I mean, yes, yeah. That would be delicious in every single way. And if they found a way to hang on to Oubre even, so they could trot out lineup CP3, Booker, insert rando, you know, small forward here. Could be Cameron Johnson, potentially, unless he's given up in a trade.
Mm-hmm.
And then Oubre at the four and Ayton at the five, that becomes a very springy, a very versatile lineup with lots of lobs, lots of fast breaks, defensive stops, flexibility, switching. I mean, they would be fun. They would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if their willingness to dangle Oubre is... I mean, I'm with you in thinking he could easily be a small ball forward, but, you know, they've been playing him mostly at the three. So, I think if they're willing to move him, it is basically we aren't planning on re-signing him in 2021 because we think Mikal Bridges is our long-term starting small forward.
Right.
And they probably want more of a stretch for, like, I don't know if Cameron Johnson. Don't know if he's the answer, but like, I mean, when they moved him into the starting lineup and he was playing that stretch four role next to Ayton, both of those guys really started cooking. So I think they want that archetype at least, which is why I floated someone like Gallo or Bertans. I agree with you about Jeremy Grant, conceptually not an especially great fit next to Ayton, but you know, if you stick a Davis Bertans in there, the defense might not be great, but you're flamethrowing on offense.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you even keep Dario Saric instead, and you have him play the sort of four that I'm talking about. Yeah. No, they have options, and this is the first time in a few years we've said that about Phoenix, I think. You know, they finally have options. I don't know how they got there, but they did. And your hats off. That doesn't mean they still shouldn't have taken Luka Doncic. Obviously, should, but
sure.
You know, they have pivoted very, very well.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the impact that even I don't think anyone would call Ricky Rubio an all-star caliber point guard at this point of his career, but even just like a league,
or at any point of his career.
Yeah, right. But you know, I think it's fair to call him at least league average. And just putting a league average point guard on that Phoenix team and seeing the difference it made compared to what they've been trotting out for the past few years. It's like, okay, now we can upgrade from, you know, league average Ricky Rubio to all-star Chris Paul.
Yeah.
I can understand the incentive here. I'm not saying it, you know, Chris Paul is obviously not going to factor into their long-term plans, but honestly, neither is Ricky Rubio. He's already, or he's going to be 30, or I think he actually just turned 30. In October. So, mm-hmm. You know, they're both under contract for the next 2 years. Obviously, Chris Paul is much more expensive than Ricky Rubio, but you know, if your whole idea is basically like we need to take that next step, we need to like roll the momentum from the bubble when we went 8-0 and we were the feel good story of the seeding games. Let's roll that into, you know, next season and actually being a playoff contender. I don't think adding Chris Paul puts them in the top four conversation in the West. The West is just too good. But I genuinely think they could be a playoff team next year if they do swing a move like this.
could you imagine just Paul coming off like a high screen from Aiden and getting that elbow jumper?
Yeah. Because
Rubio has that, you know, ability, or not the ability, sorry, he has the chance to take that shot, but he doesn't because he's an inconsistent jump shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Paul, on the other hand, in terms of the spot up threes and him coming off of high picks and pulling up from elbows, I mean, that's gonna change their entire offense. Not to mention their defense, where he's still impeccable. And as Ricky Rubio is no slouch himself. And I will say as much, they are going to give up size because Rubio is still 6'4". Mm-hmm. And can really slide over to three different positions and guard them. But that said, offensively, I think is where the big push is. Like, Paul just understands, you know, time and score, and he's a much better shooter. He's more, what's the word? He's more patient.
Mm-hmm.
And Devin Booker might average 30.
Yeah, I mean, Devin Booker has shown on-ball chops too. So to have him as a secondary creator with Chris Paul on the other side, like that. I mean, I think you're right to bring up the defense. Losing Rubio, not to say Chris Paul is bad at defense. He is not. He's very pesky and annoying. But if you lose Rubio and Oubre, you are giving up some size there. And if you know, you're still going to have Bridges, who is a very good defender, but I don't think this is going to be like a top 10 defense. But I think that the idea would be, okay, we can have league average or even slightly below league average defense, but we're going to have top 10, even close to top 5 offense to help offset some of that.
Right. Right. Yeah. I have a feeling that this is one of those deals that gets done.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense for both sides. Here's the question, though, and I think I know the answer if you're already reluctant to include Oubre in this. If OKC wants Rubio, Oubre, and number 10, what do you say if you're Phoenix?
Oh, boy. I mean, you know, I can't answer on behalf of Phoenix, obviously, but I do think you would have to go, you would have to have an internal debate if you're Phoenix. You have to sit down and you have to go, all right, guys, What is it that we're trying to do here? Do we want to make the playoffs, you know, this coming season, or just put ourselves in the best situation to make the playoffs this coming season and then future be damned? Or are you basically saying, look, we ended the bubble on it. What is it? 8 straight wins. We are really clicking. We have a young roster who enjoys playing together. They're locked in. Should we just move forward with what we have? I think that this is what it boils down to, and I think that's a conversation they need to have. I think it's a lot to give up for a guy on that type of contract at that age, but if they're all in on a playoff run for next season, you know, who am I to argue against that? The league is open in many ways.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think number 10... Because again, Chris Paul, it's not as bad as Russell Westbrook, but like that is still a massive contract, and you are doing OKC a favor by giving them some modicum of salary relief. Like, right. If I was Phoenix, I would probably try to counter, and if you're not planning on re-signing Saric, maybe try to include him as part of the package in a sign-in trade and see if you can get a bite on that.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
I think the foundation of this trade is there for both sides, and you just have to haggle out the details at this point. But I'm with you. I mean, this is one that I could easily see getting done next week.
Yeah. If they kept 10, it would behoove them to get a point guard, because then that point guard would be under the tutelage of Chris Paul for the first year. Like, I brought him up once already, but I'm just going to keep bringing him up because I'm in love with this game. Kyra Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's right now a speedy point guard who just plays, you know, like he's got a rocket up his ass. So if he begins to understand, you know, half court sets because of Chris Paul, then in a couple of years when Paul's contract expires and maybe he's, you know, considering retiring or whatever, then boom, Kyra Lewis gets promoted to starting PG.
Yeah.
And having had 2 years of Chris Paul tutelage. That would be frightening, Brian. I think that would be very, very frightening.
I would agree.
Yeah.
So let's turn to Atlanta now, Mort, who we discussed last episode. They're going to enter the free agency most likely with the most cap space of any team in the league. So they like the Knicks with Russ, they could be one of those teams that facilitates taking back a big contract without sending out as much salary. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, Mark Stein reports that they have emerged as a potential trade destination for Drew Holiday and multi-team trade scenarios that would involve their number 6 pick in next week's draft. It is worth noting that Chris Kirshner of The Athletic say multiple sources told me the Hawks are not currently or currently not a possible trade destination for Drew Holiday. So this could just be smokescreen season. But what would you think about the Hawks using that number 6 pick to go after Drew?
So we saw that Drew slid up to the 2 in New Orleans and played really, really well at that off-guard spot. So I think from a fit perspective, it would work wonders. I do have some concerns about the long-term window there. Mm-hmm. It's just in terms of does he fit age-wise, because obviously he doesn't. And then there's a third perspective of it, that Trae Young is like, hey, guys, give me some upgrades right now, because right. I don't care if I'm 21 years old or 22, whatever, or 20. I don't even know. He's so young. I just want to win, and I want to win right now. Mm-hmm. So if there's pressure on the organization from their primary star to get that done, I would think that it's feasible. I mean, Drew would be a great candidate right there. What is he, 29 or 30, right? So yeah,
I'm going to double check, but I believe he's 30 at least, if not 31.
Oh, really? I thought he was from 90.
No, he is. Yeah, he is June 12th, 1990, so he is 30.
He's 30, yeah, okay.
Yep.
So, look, we just talked about Chris Paul, and he's going to be 36, and he's still very much effective.
Yeah.
Who's to say that Drew Holiday could not age gracefully and still be a very, very high caliber player over the next 5 years? If he is, you know, then that takes Trae Young into his prime, and they would still be a solid pairing. I wouldn't be against it. I would prefer someone a little younger, but that's always like the narrative. You want to attach someone who fits age-wise with your best player. But mm-hmm. at this point, I think the Hawks just want to be good. They want to be great, actually. And Drew gets them closer to that.
And, I mean, we saw the impact that Jimmy Butler, mm-hmm. over the last 3 years in Minnesota, then Philly, and now Miami, he wasn't aligned age-wise with Karl Anthony Towns or Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, or even Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero. And it doesn't matter, because he's just so good and, you know, especially in Miami, fit that culture so well and you know, infused that work ethic in his teammates too. Like, you know, he set the example, and they followed his lead all the way to the NBA finals. So I'm with you in thinking, you know, I think it's fair to be concerned about the age gap, because yes, ideally you would bring in someone a little more aligned, not just with Trey, but like you have a number of young guys, John Collins, DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, even Clint Capella is only 26.
Yeah.
So, you know, like you have in theory the core that could grow together for what, the next 5 to 10 years if everything breaks right? If that's, you know, that's the dream. I think my hesitation for Atlanta wouldn't be necessarily Drew's age. It's just that the fact that he can opt out after next season.
Right. And it's a contractual concern.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if he's willing to even sign a short-term extension, like a 1 or 2 year extension, then I'm more open to trading number 6. It's just like, if you're trading number 6 and you have absolutely no guarantee that Drew Holiday is going to stay beyond next year, that would make me a little nervous.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get that. If you trade for him, it has to be for at least a minor handful of years, like 3, maybe 4, just to get the full worth out of him, because he's in his prime right now and you kind of want to capitalize on that. That makes sense. Thankfully, they can afford it because they have a very clean cap sheet. Mm-hmm. And if they get successful, and I mean very successful, then it's not really going to matter if they spend a lot of money, because then they're going to be profitable. If there's one thing that we've seen in the history of the NBA, it's that successful teams, surprise, surprise, earn money.
Right. Right. Yeah, and I mean, like, they technically wouldn't even have to send out anything beyond the number 6 pick if, Like, if that's all it took, or, I mean, I don't know what New Orleans would want in exchange, or, you know, what, you know,
Stein says
it's a multi-team deal, so I don't know.
I have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in terms of what they would want, they would probably want Cam Reddish.
New Orleans would?
Yeah, sixth and yeah. Cam Reddish, I think, would be what they would want, because, look, Kevin Huerter is good, but he is what you, and he's going to get better, but he is kind of what he is. He's not, he's never going to be this long athletic athlete who can switch onto multiple positions, be the primary ball handler potentially down the line. You know, there is a somewhat set cap on his ceiling. Like, he can be a very, very good off guard who gives you consistent production, and that's it. Cam Reddish, theoretically, his potential is somewhat unlimited. He can become a secondary, maybe even primary ball handler. He can become the defensive anchor for a team. He can become a knockdown shooter. You know, there are certain concerns about him finishing around the rim, and there are certain limitations to him offensively, but at least when he shoots off the dribble and whatnot, but those can be fixed. I think the potential there is great. So if you align him with Zion and Brandon Ingram, and you kind of play him in this sort of you're just a wing type of role, that would be interesting if you're in New Orleans.
You also have to hire Mike Krzyzewski as your assistant head coach at that point.
Yeah. You would have to, yeah.
Because, I mean, you would be reuniting Reddish and Zion, which could be part of the appeal. And, you right. know, when you said it initially, my first instinct was like, well, wait, they have Brandon Ingram at small forward and Zion at power forward already. And then I was like, well, that doesn't matter because right. positions don't exist. And you could just play all three of them at the same time. Like, there Correct. Doesn't need to be Brandon Ingram is the two or Cam Reddish is the two. Just, I mean, we've seen it with Boston, right? We saw Hayward, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum all playing together, and that worked fine. And I don't care which one of them was the nominal shooting guard. Right. Like, you know, none of them are. Like, in theory, all three of them are small forwards, and maybe Brown's a power forward. But, like, you can just play a bunch of interchangeable, versatile wings. So,
we are so married because I was going to bring that up.
Good. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, my first thought was when you mentioned Kevin Huerter, it was like, oh, okay, well, you could actually, you know, if you're removing Drew from the equation, New Orleans, you still have Lonzo in theory as the point guard. Brandon Ingram, they're going to re-sign him. He'll be there long-term. Zion. So then you have a hole in theory to fill at the two, and then you still got to figure out what you're doing at center as well. So at six, I mean, if, you know, Okwunku is still on the board, that answers that question. Maybe Jackson Hayes takes over. And then at the two, like, they do have Josh Hart coming off the bench as well. So, you know, it could be that Kevin Huerter would fit in to that open spot vacated by Drew. But, you know, the more I think about it, like, I think you're right. I would, if I'm New Orleans, I would probably prefer Reddish, even though he's more raw and unproven at the moment. Like, we know what Kevin Huerter, you know, what his archetype is going to be. We, you know, there's more risk involved with a Cam Reddish, but I think, you know, he started off his rookie season so badly, but as the year went on, you started to see more and more flashes. It was like, oh, okay, now I understand why this kid was so highly recruited
right.
coming into college. And, like, you know, he had a disappointing year in college and it led him to slide a little bit on draft night, but, like, you started to see that talent that made him such a highly desired prospect and even coming into the NBA.
Yeah. You're looking at a 6'8 wing with long legs who takes big strides, who has a fluid motion on his jump shot. Look, I'm going to tell you a secret right now. If I was an NBA general manager, I would base it, and if I were in trade discussions with different teams, I would just basically look at their youngest, quote-unquote, small forward, or mm-hmm. you know, multi-purpose wing.
Yeah.
Even if that player is not even being used, and I would go, you know what? I want that guy as a throw-in. You know, sort of draft day. Just throw that guy in there with the mindset that's the guy I want. That's right. the guy I want. I would be hoarding wings, like multiple position wings. Hell yes. Like, if someone were like, hey, you know, we're thinking about moving Derek Jones Jr., would you be interested? Like, yes, yes, I very much would be. I wouldn't show that enthusiasm, but yeah, that kind of player could be so valuable just in a couple years down the line, and everyone would be like, why did you give him up? And I would be sitting there smirking, and I would be so glad that I didn't cash my chips on Russell Westbrook.
Well, one other quick Hawks trade before we wrap up with something else. Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer mentioned the Timberwolves are also sniffing around that number 6 pick. Yep. A possible deal could include Jarrett Culver and number 17. Mm-hmm. Which would you prefer if you're the Hawks?
Again, that depends on that discussion they should have in terms of, like, what do we want to do here? Do we want to improve immediately for Trey? Or do we just stay the course? But very similar to the conversation that Phoenix should be having, honestly. So Culver and 17, that's also very intriguing. I still think there's a lot of potential in Jarrett Culver. He was very, very disappointing offensively this year. Just didn't shoot the ball well whatsoever. And I will say it wasn't the fact that I expected him to. You know, I knew that he would have it rough there, but to the point that he did was a little bit surprising. But he's a defensive-minded ball handler. There is some shades of Andre Iguodala there. I'm not going to throw out that comp, like, from a one-to-one perspective, obviously. But there's definitely some intrigue there. And as I just said with the wing thing, like, Culver is a guy who's got great size. He's got some pretty good touch on the ball. You know, he could be a guy in a couple of years who looks dramatically different and dramatically better, who I would take a swing on. And then if I get 17 on top of it, and maybe someone like Aaron Nesmith or Sadiq Bey, you know, are available, like, hell yeah. Load up on those guys, and suddenly you have enough wings on the roster that you won't feel the pressure to extend John Collins. And you might actually be able to flip him, because you know how I stand with the old, you know, the traditional power forward ideology. I don't support it. I think that position is more or less dead. I think it's wings. So if you could swing that, that would be very intriguing for the Hawks.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think you're right, and they need to figure out what they're prioritizing. I think I would lean the Drew package, if only because, you know, as great as it is to amass a ton of young talent and just kind of see which ones float to the top and which ones aren't going to be part of your long-term future, like, at a certain point, you do have to start paying these guys. Yeah. And, you know, I think we saw that problem in Denver this year with Malik Beasley, where, like, you already paid Jokic, you just paid Murray, Michael Porter Jr. is coming up. Like, you figure you're probably allocating X number to him, and you ended up getting priced out of Malik Beasley just because, like, we had so many good young players and we can't afford all of them. So, especially in Atlanta with, you know, like, Capella's on the books for the next few years already, so they don't have to worry about that. But with Collins up for an extension this year, Trae Young next year, Reddish and Hunter, Herter as well, like, you're already going to have to, you're not going to be able to keep all five of those guys, most likely.
Consolidation trade.
Yeah, so, I mean, then add Culver and 17 to the mix. Like, exactly, you're going to have a consolidation trade at some point. So isn't a consolidation trade, like, isn't getting Drew Holiday kind of the end game for that consolidation trade, or someone like Drew Holiday
right, the end game for that?
So maybe just skip the step.
It could be, unless, of course, you basically give everyone a decent chance to show what they have, and if one of them breaks out as a big star, you kind of realize, oh, here are the main building blocks, and then we have three or four young players that we know are coming up for contract extensions who we feel aren't going to be that caliber of player that we necessarily feel that we need to keep, and then you shop those guys either individually or collectively for something a lot better. One thing I think that people kind of miss the beat on a little bit is, you know, even if a guy is up for an extension or close to it, you don't necessarily need to move that guy for a vet. Theoretically, you could decide, if you have a third-year player, you could say, okay, let me locate a first-year player in the league, or maybe someone who's about to enter a second year, who I think is undervalued. And mm-hmm. maybe we can flip some sort of deal there where, you know, the receiving team gets, you know, my guy who's up for an extension. I take a hit on the short term because the guy that I'm getting back is simply not that good yet, but I believe in his long-term potential, and I get an additional asset for it. Then all of a sudden, your cupboard is loaded. And then that's when you can make some real damage when a superstar hits the market who might fit age-wise with a Trae Young. That's when you say, hey, raises your hand here. I have draft picks, and I have four young players who basically will accelerate your rebuilding process immediately. I just want player X who fits with Trae. Okay, mm-hmm. sure, boom. I don't think it's ever a bad idea to accumulate assets as long as you know there's an out. Denver, what they did wrong was they waited for too long with Malik Beasley. I mean, they should probably have traded him after his breakout season last year, mm-hmm. which, again, I understand that's... But like, if you're going to offer him $10 million a year after he proved that he was capable of actually becoming at least a fringe starter, then it's on you. Then instead of offering him that contract, then you should have seen, you know, at the trade deadline in 2019, you should have said, oh, we're seeing the writing on the wall. Maybe.
Right.
So there's a year and a half left on his deal. Maybe let's see what he's worth. So this is on Denver. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think we can, like, look at Denver and say, oh, that's the, you know, worst case blueprint, because Denver just effed up on that one.
That's fair. Yeah. So let's end more. We're going to violate our own rule here. So we're going to share a rumor, not from one of the big rumor mongers. Instead, this is from Adam Kaufman. He is the sports director at iHeartRadio, also works for NBC Boston. He at least, I don't want to frame it as he reported this. I think it was more just a hypothetical, and I think we should discuss it in that sense. He said, it's possible the Celtics flip picks and Kemba Walker to the Pelicans for Drew Holiday and send Gordon Hayward to the Pacers for a deal involving Miles Turner. So again, I'm not saying that he is reporting that this is going to happen, that these teams have even discussed this, but hypothetically,
yeah,
you know, Boston is kind of like, this is Danny Ainge's dream time, because it is the time where he can make up almost deals that he completed or didn't complete. Yeah. But like they do have some flexibility here. I mean, Gordon Hayward, we still don't know if he's opting in or out. I think the safe assumption is in, unless we hear otherwise. But if Boston is concerned about Kemba's knees, something like this actually would make a lot of sense.
They get younger as well. Not just Miles Turner, but also Drew Holiday, who is younger than Kemba Walker, if I'm not mistaken, by a year. That's not a lot, but it definitely would make them more age appropriate with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. On the value of it, I think it's somewhat fair, at least from Boston's. I it's two trades, so I'm still grasping it a little bit. How would the contracts wouldn't align, right, with Gordon Hayward?
They would have to set the Indy would have to send out more.
Yeah, more money. Jeremy Lamb or something.
Yeah, I think that would be the theory. And maybe it's a three-team deal if Boston doesn't want to gamble on Lamb's recovery from the ACL tear.
Right. Yeah, but, I mean, they might be forced to. Okay, but let's just assume there will be salary components added to it, such as Jeremy Lamb. The Pelicans, they're the ones I'm like, why? What are they? I like Kemba Walker, but like you just said, if the knees are a problem, why would the Pelicans entertain this idea? Why would they not just instead go, Drew is gone now, so let's pivot onto a young point guard instead? Why would they take on a 31-year-old point guard in Kemba Walker?
Yeah, I think the question is, how sold are they on Lonzo as their long-term point guard?
Right.
Because if they are not sold on him, I mean, he is up for an extension this offseason. If they, you know, don't want to sign him to one, or he's up next offseason, right?
No, he's had 3 years, so after next season, he's up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's up for an extension this year, wouldn't start till next year. So, correct. I mean, they probably, I mean, I don't think they would give him anywhere near a max right now. And, I mean, I don't know what Lonzo would even want. Like, if he's willing to sign 4 years, $80 million, they'd probably do that.
Oh, my God. You think so? $20 million a year for Lonzo?
Yeah, maybe not.
God, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't even get close to that, Bri.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they reach an extension this offseason. I just think there are too many unknowns. And, yeah. I think especially considering, Ingram is going to get a max. You have to just, I mean, this whole thing goes to hell if Zion gets hurt. But, like, you're basically allocating 2 years down the road, we are going to give Zion a max extension. So you have to, like, build with those two guys in mind moving forward. So, yeah, I mean, I think the question is whether you believe Lonzo is the best long-term fit there or whether Kemba could be better. Yeah. But
maybe just add in the picks. Maybe that's the sweetener. That's why the Pelicans do it. Like, if you're Boston, like, you're shopping the 3 first-round picks anyway.
Right.
Maybe that's just what you do. You say we know that we're getting the better player here. You know, we know that you're getting a guy who might have some knee concerns, and he's 31, and he's a shot taker, which you don't really need considering who you have. But if we give you all 3 draft picks, would you be willing to look the other way, and then you can flip Kemba later on? And the Pelicans would be like, it'll be a hassle. Give us the second rounder as well, and they'll be good. okay, done.
Right.
But then if that happens, and remember, I'm not a big fan of Miles Turner, but if that happens, Boston, of course, depending on other moves made in the East, they would probably rank number one for me next year. Like, good Lord, would that be a dangerous team defensively.
Yeah, if you're flipping for Kemba for Drew especially. Like, remove the Kemba from Drew thing even, because I don't know how realistic that is. I think you're right. You got to include some of, if not all 3 of those first rounders. But it's like, when we discuss 3 first rounders, it's 14, which is good. And then it's like 26 and 30, which, okay. But I don't think that's, swinging any massive trade. Like, 2 first round picks in a bad draft. I guess the appeal to those is that you at least do get the locked in 4 years on a pretty cheap contract.
Correct.
Which should be appealing given the financial concerns hanging over the league. But, remove that from the equation. Let's say they keep Kemba. I mean, I think conceptually a Gordon Hayward for Miles Turner and something trade, like, and salary filler, whatever it ends up being, it does make a lot of sense for both sides. Like, I think we've talked about this in a past episode, because it's just like,
well, not this frame, but yes.
Yeah. It's just one of those trades that's like, it makes so much sense that it's probably not going to end up happening, because that's usually how these things go. But, like, for Indiana, you break up the front court logjam a little bit. You've got a nice, Hayward's on an expiring contract, but, like, you can play him at the 3, TJ Warren at the 4. Who knows what happens with Oladipo? You still have Malcolm Brogdon in there. Sabonis. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a pretty good team, and it fits better. And then Boston, you're solving your big center conundrum by adding Miles Turner, who we have been long frustrated by.
Offensively.
Right. Yeah. But in Boston, you're not going to need much out of him offensively.
Shoot 3s. That's it.
And yeah.
Complete putbacks. But dude, let me just read you the lineup. Defense, just seen from strictly a defensive mindset, okay?
Mm-hmm.
6'4", Drew Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
6'3", Marcus Smart. 6'7", Jaylen Brown. 6'7", 6'8", Jason Tatum. And 6'11", Miles Turner.
Yeah.
Defensively, they would be able to switch everything.
Yeah.
Everything. They would be, hands down, the best defensive starting unit in the league, like from an yes. individual perspective, and it probably wouldn't even be close. Like, they would have nights, and maybe even many nights, where they kept teams in the low 80s.
Yeah, I mean, especially once, you know, I don't know, regular season, because they just wouldn't have as much time to scheme for individual opponents, but...
Oh, no, but remember, they have Brad Stevens, and who would you rather have? Brad Stevens or Giannis Antetokounmpo, right?
Brad Stevens or Jesus, who would you take?
well, that's a bad... Yeah,
But yeah, I mean, I think especially once you get into the playoffs, I mean, just the man on man defense would be outrageous.
Completely.
Yeah, if the Pelicans are willing, you know, if they're willing to take a call on Jrue Holiday and have Kemba as the main piece back, I think that might be the one trade that Danny Ainge actually completes instead of almost completes.
Yeah. Even
if it means giving up his beloved Semi Ojeleye or Brad Wanamaker.
No Terry Rozier this time around.
Yeah.
So Brian, it's about time to wrap up the podcast, but I want to end it on a Vogue tweet that just came out.
Oh boy.
Here's how sources describe the marketplace for a possible Russell Westbrook trade. Slow developing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not surprised, but yeah, there we are.
That sounds about right. All right, yep. Cool. Well, everyone, get some sleep this weekend because, I mean, just based on the amount of rumors that have come out over the past few days, I think once this trade window opens, whenever it is, we're going to see a lot of action quickly, and then we still have the draft next Wednesday, the start of free agency next Friday. Like, tell your friends and family you are going into quarantine all week, NBA quarantine. It's about to get lit. Yep. So sleep well this week, this weekend, and let's get ready for some fun next week. And please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker, and download the Locker Room app on iOS, and you can come hang out with us live as we're doing these podcasts. You can ask questions. As you saw, we were able to answer a few today mid-pod. So please come hang out, ask some questions. We'll have some fun.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Mort.
No, I'm just going to say, I'm pretty sure it's iOS, Brian.
Oh, I don't care.
You're the GIF guy instead of GIF, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. No. God, no. But until next time, I'm Brian Sapork, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good weekend, Mort.
You too, Brian. Don't die, man.